This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
The Revolution with Juan McCartney is sponsored by Fidelity Bank Bahamas, J.S. Johnson, Wendy's, Commonwealth Bank, Bahamas Bus and Truck, Burger King, and Open Current.
Welcome to the revolution here on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. My name is Juan McCartney. Thanks so much for joining us. We were supposed to be having one Jeffrey Lloyd Esquire, the Minister of Education, join us today, but honorable Jeffrey Lloyd Esquire, but I don't see Jeff. Perhaps I am the one who got the date mixed up, or perhaps he's just very busy. We'll sort that out. He's welcome, of course, any day. Unfortunately, I had planned my show around that, so we'll just have to kind of make do with discussing current affairs, which there's no lack of current affairs to discuss. But Jeff said he's coming. He's on the way. All right, great. So before until Jeff gets here, let's talk about this. And I wanted to, I'm sure Jeff could talk about it too. I wanted to highlight today the passing of Sir Charles Carter, who died on Saturday in hospital, by all accounts, peacefully surrounded by family members. Now, let's be clear about one thing. Sir Charles Carter was a towering force in broadcasting in this country. Much of what now exists as broadcasting was built around the structures that he, along with others at the Broadcasting Corporation of the Bahamas, set up, particularly after majority rule and then when ZNS really started rolling, running up to independence and thereafter in terms of a television arm. But in terms of radio, he was, exceptional. He was excellent. He had incredibly high standards for broadcasting, and his was an immeasurable contribution to the Bahamas in terms of broadcasting, in terms of journalism. He served as general manager of the Broadcasting Corporation. He had served as a publisher and general manager of the Nassau Guardian for a time. He spearheaded the 160th anniversary edition of the Nassau Guardian, which is a deep, deep chronicle of the history of the Bahamas. He was a man who possessed an encyclopedic knowledge of Bahamian culture, and his was one of the voices that resonated in my head as a young man that kind of shaped events going on in the Bahamas. Him, Kelsey Johnson, Ed Bethel, Mike Smith, you understand these people, and their knowledge transferred to others, and it reached across generations. My wife worked for Sir Charles Carter when she was in broadcasting. And now you could see the transfer of knowledge over the generation. So a Jeffrey Lloyd, who mentored me in broadcasting, would have worked for Charles Carter, have been mentored by him. All right? You have a Wendell Jones, would have worked for Charles Carter at the Broadcasting Corporation of the Bahamas, would have been mentored by him, Wendell Jones, who gave me my start in broadcasting. Wendell Jones would always say that he was thrust onto the air by Sir Charles Carter. One day when he said he didn't want to read the news, he said, "You're going to read the news," as was I thrust on the air by Wendell Jones through my then boss, Candia Dames, who said that Quincy Parker won't be able to read the news for the next few days. So in the morning, you therefore will read the news. You didn't get choices, all right? And so, you know, I read the news. And I didn't like getting up early in the morning, but as always, I gave it my best shot. And when Wendell Jones was on his way in, the day after I started reading the news at 11:97, he said, "Boy, you sound good on that radio now." And that was it, right? I was reading the morning news from then on. Get used to waking up in the morning. So, you know, Charles Carter has been instrumental in a lot of what we have today. And what we have is not perfect. And what we have can always be improved upon, and we can always strive for better. But what we have is a good thing, all right, that we have this national dialogue, that we have this preservation of Bahamian culture, that we still seek to identify what about us makes us Bahamians. Charles Carter represented that, and his life was a life well-lived. His contribution was a great one, and he was recognized, and a better Bahamian story you could hardly have told. All right? So our condolences to him from the Nassau Guardian and from Guardian Radio to his family. And we hope that you find some comfort, even though we know your loss is great. We hope that you find some comfort in knowing that Sir Charles gave so much to this country and it is appreciated. All right, we got Jeff Lloyd in there. I was just talking about you. Good afternoon, sir. No, those are lies. Those people are lying to you. Close that door for me. Yeah. There we go.
As much as I love and respect and admire you, you still mistreat me. With
oh, man. I don't know who's telling you these things.
Talking bad about me. I listen to you.
No. I don't believe that. Just before we get into the other stuff, I was just mentioning Sir Charles Carter. And though I never had the opportunity to work under him, you certainly did. And my wife did as well later on in his life. And he just made such an incredible contribution to broadcasting in this country and journalism as well. And I know that you know him personally.
You are absolutely right, Juan. First of all, thanks a lot. Good afternoon, Bahamas. And it's a joy always to be with you, Juan. Charles and I began our relationship when I came back from university in 1974. I joined ZNS on February the 18th, and he immediately became my mentor. Well, that's not true. Charles and I developed our relationship when I was a student at St. Augustine's, and I had become the deputy head boy. Deputy head boy. And he had a show called The Young Bahamian Show, as many of you would remember. It started out back in 1967 or so on a one-hour Saturday morning and eventually grew to about 3 hours on Saturday morning. And it was the most popular show by 1,000 miles on radio in those days. And he invited us at the time, Eric Patrick Cash, late, who was president of the student council. I was vice president, Adley Woodside, and we were on the show a couple of times talking about a variety of things, student leaders in the Bahamas, issues affecting the Bahamas as young people would have seen it. Don't forget, the PLP came to office on January the 10th, 1967, and in April the 10th, 1968, Pinling called an election, and the PLP won 27 to the UBP's 10 seats. So this was really a phenomenally inspirational time in the country for us young people. We just had glitters of, you know, phenomenal grace and opportunity and potential in our land. And at the same time, we were in the senior years of St. Augustine's on our way to college. And when I returned, I joined ZNS from college, joined ZNS, and Charles at that time had become the program manager. And he essentially took me under his wings. I was in the newsroom. Kelsey Johnson was the station manager. Ed Bethel was the news director. Mike Smith was our immediate boss, the news editor. And right away, Charles's belief was that if you were in radio, you should be on the radio speaking. You should be in the background. And he obviously recognized whatever talent and so on. But he would put you in a place that if you made mistakes, not that many people would hear you, like 10 o'clock at night. 10 o'clock at night.
You own your craft, yeah.
Yeah, so I was reading the news at 10 o'clock in the nighttime. And for 5 months, and don't forget now, this was 1974. The Bahamas had just become independent, 73. And we began a program of going around the family islands. And I was one of those reporters that went around the family islands asking Bahamians, how was it in the new independent Bahamas? Charles organized that with the news team, Ed Bethel and so on. In around August of 1974, I got a call one night late from the late Deacon Leviticus Adley and asked if I would wish to join the faculty at St. Augustine's. And I wrote a resignation letter that night. And said that I would be leaving ZNS. And Charles, of course, and I sat the next morning, and he says, please don't make this mistake. We have just broken ground on television. You are one of those who we see as the new anchor on TV, carrying the news and so on, as well as programs that we have in mind for you to host. That was nothing to persuade me. I wanted to be a teacher. I never had been trained as a teacher and so on. But to go to show you just what kind of man that this man was, who developed Bahamians, who believed in Bahamians, who was committed to the Bahamas, committed to Bahamiana, if I may use that term. Charles was the man, I think, came up with the term rake and scrape, actually. And he went all over the Bahamas, and particularly down on Nassau Street where they had a club, and he would carry his little recorder and recorded all kinds of groups and bands, and featured them. I could remember, the people like Beginning of the End and Ronnie Butler and a host of others all over the family islands, Cat Island and so on. And this is how he brought Bahamian music into, as it were, the popularity that it, some would say it is today. You are absolutely right on, Juan McCartney. There is probably no personality in broadcasting in the history of the Bahamas that equals Charles Carter, and it's going to be pretty tough. You're on the way, but it's going to be pretty tough for someone to come behind and match those outstanding, incredibly amazing contributions that he made to broadcasting, the broadcast media in the Commonwealth of the Bahamas. And of course, we know Charles eventually went on to own a radio station, Island TV, and so on and so forth. Were it not for Charles Carter, I don't think the television would have gotten off to the extent that it did. The Queen came and opened the television station, as many of you would remember, in 1977, I think it was. But and he was the one who started a program called Focus, if you would remember. It's a evening time talk show, the way you have it in the United States and elsewhere right now. But the country has lost a phenomenally gifted Bahamian. Charles went to the United States, studied in New York, broadcasting and production, came back and gave his life to this country, eventually moving on. And then eventually he was sent to England to study public administration, came back, and as you remember, he joined the Progressive Liberal Party, became a member of Parliament for the Holy Cross constituency.
Yep, he was my MP, yep.
He was eventually a cabinet minister. He became a cabinet minister of foreign affairs. He was a minister of consumer affairs, I think, at one point. Just an incredible, incredible personality. And to his last days, I mean, Charles was in love with the Bahamas, contributed to the Bahamas. He had show on his radio station, like This We Bahamas or This We Bahamians. And the history and the knowledge that he had and the perspectives about being Bahamian he had, it's unmatched in Bahamian history.
Absolutely. I get you, too. It makes me think about those of us in broadcasting, ultimately, what manner of contribution would you want to make to the national discourse? And will it ultimately rise to a level that people would remember that you had made a mark and that you had elevated the discourse and that you had brought more education, more insight, more perspective. I know you certainly did that with your show, and you were very extremely well regarded with your contribution. And now you're kind of following in his footsteps, and now you're in public life as well. So it's very interesting for people to look at these figures and see how you can model yourselves after them to actually make a contribution that matters.
Consummate broadcaster, and you're absolutely right on the money, education, information, and insight. This is why we are in the business, Juan. We are not here to, as such, try to insult people, to malign, you know, to oppress, to kind of gotcha. You're here to educate, to elucidate, to provide the information for the sake of Bahamians and let them make up their own minds. But Charles went a lot further. Charles brought the definition of Bahamian culture to the fore. And he did so through music and through art. And to this day, I mean, you cannot, the Ronnie Butlers of the world and all of these new artists stand on the shoulder of a Charles Carter. We had, for instance, in my day, what we used to call Calypso music or Bahamian music. He called Reconscript. There were festivals in Cat Island, and the people came from around the world. Folks went to the Family Islands in regattas. And again, the feature was Bahamian music, Bahamian art, Bahamian culture. Charles was at the pinnacle of his success in that genre. And the world owes him, this Bahamas owes him an incredible debt of gratitude and honor for his singular contribution to the world of Bahamian culture.
All right. So today we're going to talk turkey. We're going to talk some current affairs. We're not going to hold back. You're fully prepared, you say, to answer any questions, address any concerns. We're going to talk some politics as well, because the season approacheth. It is now the FNM's fourth year in office, and there will ultimately be an election sometime before or around May 10th. 2022. And you, sir, have been ratified once again for the South Beach constituency. And you tell me that you have no plans to go anywhere, whether in respect of being in administration in the government of the Bahamas or with respect to being a member of parliament for the South Beach constituency. Do you think, and why do you think, that your FNM government, your FNM cabinet, deserves another term in office?
The record speaks for itself, Juan, and it's the only thing that you can place before the Bahamian people as a government is your record. Promises mean absolutely nothing at this time. Obviously, there will be a manifesto that will lay out the plan of the Free National Movement should it become the government of the Bahamas. But you have been the government for 4 years, and what you have to provide for the Bahamian people is your record. It's as simple as that. An opposition has the luxury, quote unquote, of providing a promise and somewhat of a blueprint as to what may happen if they are successful. The government of the day, the PLP, when it was government, Free National Movement was government, lay before the Bahamian people its record. And I don't think that there is, without doubt, the record of this Free National Movement is something I certainly am proud of, despite the circumstances that we have found ourselves in coming to office and the circumstances we found ourselves in while in office, which are, in my estimation, unmatched in Bahamian history. I mean, you only have to take a look and see that we had, right out of the gate, met $300 and something million, almost $370 million in debt that was not paid, that was not known to the Bahamian people at the time that we came into office, met a situation in our country which had suffered some 4 downgrades. It was not looking very pretty in the eyes of the Bahamian and the public, the rating agencies. We had a significant unemployment issue in 2017. We had just come off probably the worst murder rate in a 5-year period in the history of the Bahamas, well over 700 murders, despite the former government decrying the Ingram administration for the 492 murders in its 5-year history. Since that time, we immediately was confronted with the unfortunate hurricane in southern Bahamas, where we had to evacuate an entire island. We never had to do that before, Ragged Island, and decimated significant parts of the Mike Al constituency, Auckland and Crooked Island. We are not even out the gate yet. Despite that, we still had two consecutive years of economic growth, unlike the previous 5 years, which had flat or zero growth. Two consecutive years of economic growth in the Bahamas. And yet, here comes September of 2019, when a monster storm, the worst in the history of this region, slams our shores, knocks out some 30 or 35% of our revenue, two of our major economic centers, and just puts us back significantly. Had to scramble now and to help rescue the people of Abaco, the people of Grand Bahama, in particular the people of Abaco. We could talk about what transpired in education as a result of that. We are not yet even able to get back up on our feet. We have got thousands of people without homes in Abaco, Grand Bahama, seriously affected. And the world is slammed on March 17th with a pandemic. And of course, all of our plans have to shift now into surviving and to saving lives, as the Prime Minister continues to say, and to provide support for those persons who are affected, and that includes thousands and thousands of Bahamians. We made the decision that we are not going to lay off any member of the public service because that will only add to the misery, which we didn't. We have provided some $250 million and climbing to persons who are unemployed, many of whom never contributed a nickel to the National Insurance Fund, tens of millions of dollars in the food program, again, to assist in supporting persons who just simply did not have a means to support themselves. This government has done phenomenally well. We could talk about education and what we have done in education, talk about the economy and what we have done, talk about health care and what we have done in health care. This government, in the circumstances, has done very, very well. And I cannot imagine, well, I can imagine, but I cannot imagine what performance this government would have had and made had it not been for those unfortunate circumstances. There's no complaint. That's what happened. We dealt with it in the manner in which we are required to do as a government or any leader, and that is to make whole our Bahamian people and our Bahamian society to the best of our resources and to enable us to continue to thrive to the extent that we have over these past 4 years. Look at 2019, the best record in the history of the Bahamas in terms of tourism arrivals. The first time in almost a decade that our unemployment rate had dipped below 10%. Thousands of jobs created during, again, not the most auspicious of economic times, and yet, you know, here we are today, beginning now to see an emergence of our economic future and aspirations now that makes us feel very good. Last week was one of the best weeks in terms of tourism arrivals in the Bahamas, so much so that it kind of almost brought the house down with the, I think it's the health visa, making it difficult for people to be able to secure a health visa within a reasonable time because it was just jammed with folks trying to get to the Bahamas. We are very much on our way, and we have done very well.
Now, speaking, we can speak about all those things, but what I want to speak about is what I think is most present in most people's minds is the management of national affairs during the course of the pandemic, because as it was new for you guys in cabinet, it was new for all of us and new for everyone around the world. There seems to be a sense, particularly given what was said by the Prime Minister in the House today, that they are hoping that they don't need the full 90 days for the extension of the state of emergency, that they would be able to pass laws and return to some sense of normalcy. There seems to be a serious thrust by the Prime Minister, and I would imagine by extension the cabinet, to want to move past the pandemic and frame it as if the absolute worst is behind us, but yet the pandemic's not letting go of us right now. So deaths have still been climbing. No, they haven't been to the rate that they were during the second wave, but there's no doubt we're in a third wave. COVID cases have been climbing. The hospital is deeply challenged. Now, you tell me, and members of cabinet say, that these decisions with regard to the emergency orders are not made in a vacuum, that they're cabinet decisions. So explain to me why we see a loosening of restrictions as coronavirus cases are still climbing. There are still some deaths that are occurring. Why do we see loosening restriction as opposed to tightening in some areas?
We've always got to have a balancing act. One, we know that it is necessary for us to find ways, creative ways, and sensible ways, reasonable ways, safe ways for this economy to get going so that people can get back to work and they can continue to survive and to thrive in an environment that meets their aspirations and their designs and strategies. That's on the one hand. But at the same time, you're absolutely right. This pandemic is still with us. We are not out of the woods by any stretch. We are still required to wear our masks, wash our hands, maintain safe distances. And you see that in an emergency order, that has not been relaxed whatsoever. What we are encouraging and have encouraged people to do is to get vaccinated. I'm sitting here, Yvonne McCartney, approximately 2.5 hours after my second shot, right this morning. And a good number of people were at the Kendall G.L. Isaacs Gymnasium, and I presume elsewhere, as the government opened the second shot opportunities last week. So, and you will find this in all of the guidance that we get. We get it from the health authorities. We have been guided by the health authorities who continue to permit us to make certain relaxations, but at the same time to restrict certain other circumstances because we cannot afford to overwhelm our health system. We cannot afford to lock this country back down where we will then only cause greater hardship on our economic survival, economic revival that is presently underway. And we are therefore encouraging and inviting people, if not begging people, to please ensure that they are meeting the mandates as prescribed. At the same time, to please go out and get vaccinated, despite the hesitancy that we recognize in the marketplace. So the short answer is there has to be a balancing act. You see this across the globe. Folks want at the same time, while they are permitting businesses to operate with a certain, as you described, relaxed environment, we have to at the same time be careful because we cannot afford for this situation to get out of hand. The cases are unfortunately not as we would like them to be. I think I saw the report of some 40 or 45 cases that were reported just 2 days ago or a day ago. Before that was about 50 or so. That's not where we want to be in the coming. I'm talking about New Providence. The rest of the Family Islands are doing very well. That's not where we want to be. But at the same time, we have to be very careful that we don't strangle an economy that is beginning to show signs of life, where people are getting ready, going back to work, and beginning to sustain themselves and to sustain this economy.
Now, the government has thrust, and your thrust, as you specifically said, you've asked people to go get vaccinated. I see your sticker right there. You're fully vaccinated. You can now go indoor dine, don't take a PCR test to travel, etc. But if everyone were to take up the offer to be vaccinated for free, the fact remains that there's only going to be, by next month, 100,000 doses that the country would have received, which means that's enough to vaccinate 50,000 people. If people do pick up and the hesitancy does reduce, as it likely will as time goes on, how are you going to ensure that there is enough vaccine to inoculate the population? And that may be a question for the Minister of Health, but you're here, so.
Every day, Juan, we are working assiduously to secure more vaccines. Right this minute, the Ministry of Health, we had a cabinet meeting last evening, and this evening we're going to be having a report from the medical authorities every single day. It's not that easy to get vaccines, I must confess to you. But each day we are working to find ways of getting more vaccines and to be able to provide those vaccines for our population. We have got many offers of vaccines. Oh, I can get this vaccine for you. I can get that vaccine. As a country, we have got to be extremely careful because we also know that there are many fake vaccines out there, which obviously we cannot allow to enter our country and go into the arms of our Bahamian people. So you're absolutely right. At the moment, you know, if everybody wanted a vaccine and wished to get one, we would not have sufficient supply. However, that is not precluding our Minister of Health, the Honorable Renwood Wells, and this government from scouring the earth to find ways to get vaccines into our country. We have reached out to every single available partner that this country has across the globe, including the United States, to see how, as you remember, I think it's some 35 or 40 million doses of AstraZeneca vaccines that the U.S. has sitting there in its warehouses. It's about ready to expire sometime in the next several weeks. We have been saying to our U.S. counterparts, please, you are going to distribute some of them around the world because it's important for you as a world leader to show that kind of leadership. Do not forget your neighbor that is sitting on your doorstep called the Commonwealth of the Bahamas. And we are making our pleas, hoping it did reach the ears of the President of the United States, Mr. Joe Biden. So it isn't without our efforts trying, I can assure you of that, Juan. And we, I think, are making some headways, and the government should be in a position very, very soon to announce the availability of more vaccines.
All right. Are we limited to just AstraZeneca, or we're doing any approved World Health
All
Organization?
All approved vaccines. All. Every single available, approved, WHO and the CDC, every single available vaccine that we could put our hands on, we are trying our very best. You remember now, we are the participants in the COVAX facility.
Yes.
Okay? And so naturally, we have got the benefit of that, but even they are only able to provide what they can provide because we are among many nations who participate in the COVAX facility. As you know, we have a situation in India, which now has gripped the world, and it is now doing all it can to see if it can help India bring that under control. So naturally, resources that may have been earmarked, so to speak, for other countries now may be directed towards India to help assist in that very unfortunate situation happening there.
All right. Well, we got to take a break. We're going to be back on the other side, and we'll talk some more current affairs. And we definitely cannot shortchange education, but we will get to that today. Stay tuned. We'll be back after this break.
Everyone should experience a brand new car, but not everyone can afford one. Until now, Bahamas Bus and Truck has the answer. The stylish, spacious, feature-rich, yet affordable Mitsubishi Attrage. Priced at $21,900, including a 3-year warranty, why not come and experience the value that Mitsubishi has built into the Attrage today? Bahamas Bus and Truck, the country's only authorized Mitsubishi dealer. Telephone 322-1722.
Hello, sir. Your credit card bill is due. Hello, sir. It's time for your monthly loan payment. Tired of creditors pounding at your door? Sign up for a debt consolidation loan from Fidelity Bank and consolidate your debt into one low monthly payment. What's more, you'll also earn interest on a built-in savings account. The pandemic has curbed many freedoms, but at Fidelity, our focus is to help regain your financial freedom. Visit a branch or speak to Fidelity Bank at 356-7764. COVID safety measures in place at all branches. Fidelity, we're good for you.
The Sourdough King is back at Burger King Nassau. This fan favorite features 2 quarter-pound savory flame-grilled beef patties topped with thick-cut smoked bacon, 4 slices of melted American cheese, ketchup, and creamy mayonnaise, all on toasted sourdough slices. Get your sourdough sandwich as a single or a double and add ice-cold Pepsi and fries or onion rings for a perfect way to fill your day. The flame-grilled Sourdough King is only here for a limited time and only available at Burger King Nassau, where taste is king.
Preparing for a hurricane can make all the difference in safeguarding the lives of family, friends, and neighbors. By knowing what action you should take, you can reduce the effects of a hurricane disaster. Get all the facts of the potential of having insurance, impact-resistant windows, home emergency power, essential supplies, and a lot more before the storm. After the storm, where to purchase building or cleaning supplies, waste disposal, medical care, and more. The Nassau Guardians Hurricane Guide will help you make sure everyone knows what to do in the event a hurricane approaches. Take advantage of this double insertion opportunity plus 15 commercials on Star 106 hits. Contact us today at 302-2300. That's 302-2300 or your account executive. Will you be prepared?
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to The Revolution here on Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. My name is Juan McCartney. So good to have you with us. We're sitting here with Minister of Education, Jeffrey Lloyd, and we are talking current affairs. We're talking the government's management of the pandemic. We're talking the Minister administration's last 4 years and what that looks like and what out of that calls for the Bahamian people to once again choose the Minister administration to govern its affairs. You can join this conversation. By no means do you need to feel as though you cannot call. Jeff has no problem with that. Or you can text 4224796 is the text. 4224796 is the text. 323-6232 is the phone number. Also 325-4316 and 325-4259. So let's examine where we are with schools. The Bahamas Union of Teachers has asked the government to close all schools on New Providence and go virtual. Barring that, reduce school hours. They gave a menu of options. Grand Bahama as well, and other family islands, they want the schools to close. I communicated briefly with Director of Education, Marcellus Taylor, and he says the government is not minded to do that at this time, although it is a day-to-day assessment of the situation. And we have seen school learning interrupted by closure of classrooms, teachers being put in isolation, students, et cetera. We understand that schools will close for an almost two-week period to facilitate national exams, but where are we in terms of COVID-19 and schools, specifically New Providence?
As you know, Juan, as I've said, and the ministry has said repeatedly, it's safety first. And the best circumstance for the conduct of education for our teachers, administrators, our students, and all staff members, that is paramount in our considerations. We have been in continuous communication with the Ministry of Health and the health officials who provide guidance and direction and suggestions and recommendations to us all the time. The PS, the Permanent Secretary, Mrs. Lorena Brister, as well as the director and his team, Dr. Marcellus Taylor, are in constant communication with the health officials. And they help us to determine what is best in terms of the conduct of school. If you remember, last year, meaning 2020, we were all virtual just about throughout the country. Eventually, they gave permission for us in February to go in New Providence in particular to a hybrid model because of the conditions that were prevailing at that time. In recent times, you will know that there has been a number of cases on various campuses, and we have responded by closing some of those schools, Donald Davis as an example. It now has come to our attention, according to the evidence, that it appears as if it's best for us now to shut school down at the end of this week to permit whatever there might be floating in the atmosphere, any students who may be infected or teachers or staff members, for that period of infection to pass and only permit the students who are on the taking their exams, either taking their national exams or taking their end of term exams to be on campus. That's a limited number of students. They are very easily able to be accommodated because they can maintain social distance, so on and so forth. We are also permitting, when the school resumes, for there to be the preschool students to come back to the campus. That is where we are in this respect. And again, any of this can change depending on the circumstances. And as I've said many times, we are always guided by the health officials who have provided, and I'm most grateful to them, in particular Dr. Philip Swan, most grateful for their availability to us and their guidance to us, because we bend their ear on a daily basis, as you would expect. We're dealing with 60,000 students across the system, whether it's only the public as well as the private schools. The private schools obviously depend on the public school as guides as to what they could and should do. And we receive their, meaning the health officials' guidance, and we act accordingly.
Okay, we got a caller on the line. Let's go to the phone lines. Good afternoon. Welcome to the revolution. Hello, good afternoon. Are you there? Is this that caller present or hello, good afternoon, talk to us? I can't hear anything. Okay, fair enough. All right, so when does school resume and for how long?
June 3rd.
June 3rd, for how many weeks?
Approximately 2 weeks.
Approximately two
because
weeks.
School finishes, period, June, I think, 18th or 19th.
All right, and so what are we looking at in the fall?
Hopefully we'll be face-to-face. We have to see. Hopefully, I hold my prayers up to God every single day. Because one, there's no question. The evidence is overwhelming. Students learn best face-to-face.
Yeah, absolutely.
With a live teacher.
Yeah, virtual method is...
The virtual method is the second best. It's the alternative if there's absolutely no possible way for you to do face-to-face, even in a hybrid condition. But we need to have students in school, especially those students, preschoolers up to, say, grade 7, 8, 9, got to be in school. And the others more or less can manage on their own, but even they, too, need to be in a physical encounter with their teacher.
Let me ask you this. Given that we're going on, we're over a year now, certainly, and it looks like we'll have lost about a year and a half of schooling, do you fear that there will be challenges in the future due to developmental goals that have been missed that students may not be able to catch up on?
I wouldn't say may not be able to catch up on, but certainly it's going to be challenges. No question about it. We have lost about 16, 18 months of learning. All right? Yeah, a lot of students, one, because of no device or no internet or both, that were not simply able to engage in the educational process. We know that. Then, for a number of other reasons, particularly parents who may be out to work, parents who don't appreciate, understand, respect the value of education, they also may have caused, you know, some deficit to be experienced by their child or children. So we have got certainly that situation. And then, you know, you have also got to remember the student itself or himself. Does he appreciate, respect, understand the value of education in his or her life? And now I'm not placing blames on their shoulders as such, but they obviously have to carry some responsibility because this is, in fact, their education. I went and I travel all the time to these various schools and I ask, what is your attendance today? For instance, the school right around the corner from you, CC Sweeting, what is your attendance today? Today is the grade 11 students. What is your attendance today? Oh, Minister, we got about 50, 60, 70%. I cannot excuse that student. That's a 16-year-old.
Right.
That's a 15-year-old. Come on. You have to. I understand what your home circumstance may be. I understand whatever else you may be challenged with in your life, but you are able to come to school. And also, the teachers and the administrators, I cannot say how much I appreciate and respect and admire the work that they do, are reaching out to you. Come and talk to us. You don't have any uniforms? Okay, no problem. We'll help you with that. You have no devices? Not a problem. Come. We'll assist you with that. We go to the parents. They go into the communities. They call the students and their parents. Why isn't one in school today? How can we help? What is the problem? Well, come to the school and talk to us. We are able to assist you. Some of them don't show up. So, you know, we've got a complexity of issues surrounding education in the Bahamas. The ministry is doing more than it absolutely thought it could do in this environment with the help of the corporate Bahamas, Leno Financial Services. We are able now to put devices in the hands of just about every public school student. That's 46,000. What then is the problem? Through Alive, we were able to provide internet capability for those students who didn't have internet capability, some 10, 11, 12,000 students. So then what is now still the challenge? Why aren't these students in school? Okay, so the ministry is doing, the government is doing, corporate Bahamas is doing its part. The teachers are doing their part. The administrators are doing their part. Why still are students not in school as they ought to be? You're looking at 85, 90% attendance, which will make you comfortable and happy. No matter how much you try, it's not going to be 100%, except in some situations. But why now are you not in school? Student, why aren't you in school? Parents, why don't you have those children in school when they have the opportunity to do so?
All right, we got to take a break. I know we got a couple calls, but we can't take them right now because we got to run to a break. For news, we'll be back on the other side. Again, you can feel free to call. I want to talk some more politics, some more FNM, and I want to do this. I want to assess a Prime Minister Dr. Hubert Minnis versus a potential Prime Minister Philip Brave Davis. And talk about that on the other side of this break.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
Girl, Junior just showed me Bulla Boy in his phone.
What you mean? He take picture of that good-for-nothing boy?
Shh, you don't want Bulla hair. You say that. You know she always say that's my good child.
So what he doing in Junior's phone?
Oh, he there because the police looking for him. He on that wanted list.
Wanted persons in your phone now?
Yes, child. And when police want to find anybody quick, after something happened, they can send picture direct to your phone. Go to Google Play or App Store and search for Crack Crime Bahamas, then pick install and it will go straight to your phone.
There is also a section on missing persons.
Yes, girl. Everybody needs to get this app so police can tell us right away when these people go missing. Just like an alert system.
Yes, it has numbers for Crime Stoppers Bahamas so you can call and nobody knows you. Call directly to Miami and give the information without giving your name or anything about you. I tried the other day and when I hear Junior and his boys talking about where they hide those guns, I walk quick around the corner and call that number.
Call 328-8477 from Nassau or 242-300-8477 from the Family Islands.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to The Revolution here on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. My name is Juan McCartney, so good to have you with us. We are sitting here with the Minister of Education, the Honorable Jeffrey Lloyd, and we're talking national issues. We're also talking political issues, and I would ask you, well, let me frame this with some context. So you had said to me before you had publicly announced for the last general election that you were going into frontline politics and that you were going to end your show and you were going to be a part of the Minnis team. And, you know, I defer to your wisdom usually in all things, but I did ask you, well, why would you do that? Do you really think that Hubert Minnis has the capacity to bring about change and to be instrumental in this country? And you said that you believe he does, particularly if he's surrounded by a good team. How is your confidence in Dr. Hubert Minnis borne out?
Unquestioned. Hubert Minnis is an extraordinary leader, a man of unmatched compassion. And boy, you know, I've served the Lord now on since November the 4th, 1982, when I had that transformational experience in New Orleans, Louisiana, where I lived at the time. Of course, I had been a churchgoer before that, but I had no idea about what it really meant to be a disciple of the Lord Jesus Christ. And you have a great sense of what compassion is when you have lived it and you've seen it expressed in others. And here's a man who has that. That maybe have been shaped and formed by the life that he has lived, growing up selling peanuts, having to work with his mother who was a lunch vendor in the public school system, his daughter, his sister, and so on, and coming out of the environment in which he came. God, I mean, is just the genius of the Holy Father, the great cosmic presence in the sky, as it were, that we would have chosen a leader for a time such as this, because it's precisely what this country needed at this time. Someone who has a compassionate heart for the suffering of people, those who are dislocated persons. You hear him say over and repeatedly, it's about saving lives. It's about saving lives. Material things, very important though they may be, it's about people getting something to eat. It's about people holding on to their jobs, about people holding on to their dignity. Mm-hmm. This is who I have come to know. Now, bear in mind, please understand that Hubert Alexander Minnis and I went to St. Augustine's back in the 60s. I've known him pretty much all of my adult life, all of his adult life. So this is not anything new to me about who he is. Compassion. Also, he has a vision, okay? And he has expressed that vision over and repeatedly of where this country needs to go and the transformation this country must go and how we must spread the wealth to all persons who are capable of enjoying the spoils of this land, not just in the pockets of a selected few. But everybody should have an opportunity. This is why he insisted on providing tens of millions of dollars in the small business development program, such that today we have 18, 20,000 businesses who have benefited, over 1,000 young people who have gotten into business through grants and loans in that small development program. He knows what the struggle is to have to pay to go to college and to go to university. It's why he made it possible for young people to go to BTVI and go to University of the Bahamas tuition free in 2018, such that now more students are able to enjoy that at any time in our Bahamian history. Understands what struggles students who come from the Family Islands have, especially when it comes to housing, through his vision and the cabinet's decision made possible for students who come from the Family Islands to the University of the Bahamas or BTVI, $500 towards their rent allowance. I can go on and on and on. The monies that he has made available through his vision for the health facilities. Look at the monies that we are spending on food and food packages and the decision that we take that we are going to give to those who are unemployed, irrespective of the fact that they may not have contributed a nickel to national insurance ever in their lives. First time in the history of the Bahamas this is ever done. Nowhere in the Caribbean is it being done. This is the kind of quality of leadership that we have in the Commonwealth of the Bahamas, who has opened the spigot of our country for the benefit of Bahamians, who have welcomed investors from around the world to come and take a look at our country. And if you're going to invest, you're going to empower Bahamians. It's not simply about you coming here to make money. That's who I see, who is governing this country, is leading this government at this time, Hubert Alexander Minnis. Very proud of the work that he's doing.
All right. And for those of you who think that Jeff is just saying that because we're on air, I can tell you he's told me that privately with no microphone that he really does believe in Dr. Hubert Minnis' leadership to that extent. You can call us 323-6232, 323-6232, 325-4316, and 325-4259. Good afternoon. Welcome to the revolution.
Good afternoon, Mr. McCartney.
Hey, how's it going?
Right, you're holding on, and thank God for life.
All right.
Good afternoon to your listeners all over the world. Minister, good afternoon.
Afternoon, sir.
Okay. Minister, you know, in spite of me in the last general election voted for the Progressive Liberal Party, I always believed that Dr. Minnis is a decent human being, and I think he cares about people. One thing I like about him, that is a small town and some us. I call it kind of a petty, we let politics get in the way. But not that Dr. Minnis. He don't care if it's a PLP. And most prime ministers was like that, no. They don't care if you didn't vote for them. They understand when they become prime minister, they're there to serve everyone. Now, one thing I want to ask the minister, he mightn't be in charge of the public relations for the prime minister or the person who writes stuff for the prime minister. Maybe the prime minister writes it himself. A lot of people out here making a big thing about something the prime minister had to say a few weeks ago or a few months ago in Parliament, where he mentioned that the next time around, he'll do for the poor. Now, I know sometimes we make mistakes. Don't care how smart we is, right? I don't know if you have to be a rocking scientist to believe that what the prime minister meant, and we can't put words in his mouth, is that he's going to do more for the poor the next time around. Because God knows that I believe the man has done some things for the poor right now in spite of all of the struggles. So I don't know if it was a mistake or what, but what you think about it, minister? You think that he's going to, you think that just like how it was reported on the news that next time is for the poor, you don't believe that he done something for the poor, no matter it being a mistake, and what he meant is that he done more. I mean, he's going to do more for the poor. I'll hang up and listen. Keep up the good work.
Thank you very much, Hubert Alexander, Minister, the Prime Minister of the Commonwealth of the Bahamas, who is committed to Bahamians and residents, period. Full stop. Obviously, there are those in the country who needs a hand up. And this is why you're making available, as we did in Fox Hill, land at unbelievable prices. In Carmichael now, the first subdivision is pretty much sold out. Second portion of that subdivision is coming. Making available at the Balmoral or in that vicinity land, $40,000 for single family, $50,000 for multifamily dwellings for young, what we call young professionals. And that's a very broad term that has a very broad definition. Why? Because there are those in this country who need a hand up. This is why we made available to those in the Family Islands who need a hand up $500 toward their rent. Make it available for those who need to go to University of the Bahamas and BTVI who may not be able to afford that opportunities. There are those who need, obviously, a hand up. But there is no exclusivity in this in the commitment by Hubert Alexander, Minnesota's government. It's for the Bahamian people and for the Bahamian residents and all of those who enjoy this land for what it is and who it is and where we are and how we are being. So there are, of course, people will make a hay out of anything that anybody says. I'm on this show today with Juan McCartney, and I'm sure that there's a statement that I will make that somebody will take the wrong way. I can't do anything about that, but you do need to know, and I thank you for your call. That Hubert Alexander Minnis and this Free National Movement government, and I would hope that all governments are committed to Bahamians, period, and that they must be first and foremost in the Commonwealth of the Bahamas, and whatever is here to be enjoyed must be enjoyed by all Bahamians of equal standing, that no selectivity should be enter into the hearts and the minds of any judge or anybody who is making an evaluation as who should get and who shouldn't get. No, let's get make sure Juan get, but Jeff shouldn't get. Let's make sure John get, but Mary shouldn't get. No, not in this case, not in this government, not under the leadership of Hubert Minnis.
Now, and we're going to go to the phone line, but I'll say this. One of the challenges that I have seen that has been apparent during Dr. Hubert Minnis's prime ministership is that he is either unable to or uncomfortable with communicating extemporaneously in a manner that does not appear to be brusque and dismissive and to seem as if he does not want to be questioned about certain things. And I say that because I note quite clear is his lack of access when it comes to, he won't come here and sit down and tell, well, if you don't like me, fine. But let's say a Shivargo Lang or someone like this, he won't make himself available to talk publicly. Why is that? And a lot of people say, well, you don't have to have a leader that is overly communicative but can't get things done. But is not part of being a leader being able to communicate effectively in that manner?
I've seen Hubert Alexander Minnis, the Prime Minister of the Commonwealth of the Bahamas, talking to media personnel all the time. Jasmine Brown is talks to them. Altavis Munnings talks to them. All Jerome Sawyer, I see talking to Rashad Roll or Johnson, whatever his name is, from the Tribune. I see them all the time, outside of the House of Assembly, outside of Cabinet, all the time. when I was doing shows, Hubert Minnis was on my show, I'd say, however, that I tried any number of times to get Hubert Ingram on my show. He came one time. I tried any number of times to get Barry Christie on my show. He came only one time. I tried any number of times to get Lyndon Berlin on my show. He only came one time. So it could be for any number of reasons why they choose not to move into that particular sphere. But in terms of Mr. Minnis speaking extemporaneously, all the time. I see that he talked to the media all the time as he's leaving the House of Assembly, as he's moving into the House of Assembly. Right there in the gallery, he's talking to the press corps that he has. He's outside talking to the press at the cabinet, before cabinet. There are sometimes when we are leaving cabinet, depending on the time it is, that there's a member of the media right there, and he engages them, have a conversations with them. He tells us in cabinet that this one from the media called him and that one from the media called him and so on. So I don't know where that comes from, but I mean, that's your observation and I respect that.
Now, I think certain people have access, you know, so there are reporters who I know who can get the prime minister on the phone. I'm certainly not one of them, you know, but I used to be one of those he would actually call when he was leader of the opposition, but that has changed. Good afternoon. Welcome to the revolution.
Good afternoon.
Hey, how's it going?
Very well.
All right.
I listened to the minister, and I must give him credit. They do a good pitch, but the general populace don't feel what they're feeling, and they don't seem to understand that, because you minister after minister come with these glorious pitch of what they did and how well everything is done, but the public, general public, don't see it. And the Joe Blow public is in all PLPs or DNAs. Even FNMs are saying, these guys out to lunch. So what I want to find out from the minister, and I would like them to answer this question, yes or no. Since now that after the 2017 general election, when they smear all of this stuff about the VAT money being stolen, and they couldn't find $42 million and all of this nonsense. Was that true or was it untrue? If you could answer that for me.
Thank you very much for you. I don't know of anybody who said the VAT money was stolen. Jeffrey Lloyd certainly didn't, and I stood on no platform that said the VAT money was stolen. I heard, where did the VAT money go?
Yeah, I heard D'Aguilar alluded to that they don't know, the VAT money's missing. Yeah.
Now, where did the VAT money go? But I don't remember a single person on this team who spoke about where the VAT money went. Being stolen, number one. Number two, sir, I can give you facts. Now, whether you believe them or whether you consider them to be correct or right or so on, I give you facts. Facts are that there's free tuition for all Bahamian students at the University of the Bahamas. The facts are that there's free tuition for all full-time students at the Bahamas Technical. The facts are that more than 1,000 persons, young persons, have received grants to begin their business or expand their business. 18,000 or so have received some support from the Small Business Development Center. Facts that the Lighthouse Point is being developed by Disney. Facts, sir, that there has been significant sums of money spent to support those who are unemployed, somewhere $250 million, and it continues. These are facts. Tens of millions of dollars have gone into helping people with food packages and so on. Those are facts, sir. I don't understand when you say people don't feel it. I get that, all right? There's facts that the greatest number of tourists arriving in a single year happened under this administration. Facts that we met $370+ million unpaid bills when we arrived on May 10th, 11th, 12th, whatever time it was in 2017. Those are facts. Now, if you can dispute those facts, then I understand that. And if people don't feel that or don't believe that, there's nothing I can do about that, all right? Facts that 9.9% was the unemployment rate just a year, just a couple of months before the Dorian. Facts that our two large economies outside of New Providence, Grand Bahama and Abaco, were decimated by Hurricane Dorian in 2019. 1,800 students out of Abaco alone had to be placed across the Commonwealth of the Bahamas and put in schools over there as a result of that Dorian experience in Abaco, and in particular, struggling to get that island back on its feet. Grand Bahama is well on its way. Those are facts. Now, whether you believe them, you can check it out for yourself. You can go and do your own verification exercise. None of us today like the situation that the world is in. It's not just about the comfort of the Bahamas. Everybody would like for us to go back, quote unquote, to what would used to be before September of 2019. Certainly I would. I certainly am tired of wearing a mask. I'm happy for my second shot so that I can reduce the times that I would be wearing a mask. I'm still going to observe what the CDC requires. If I'm out in a crowd, I'm going to have on my mask, but I'm out walking and on the beach with my wife and my children, and I'm not going to necessarily have a mask because I'm not in anybody's particular vicinity, okay? Nobody wants to be in that situation. Of course things are unpleasant at this time, but whose fault is that? I mean, of course there's an invisible enemy called the coronavirus. That's a challenge. Of course there was an unwelcome guest in 2019 called Dorian. That's a challenge. Unwelcome guest in 2017, November, I think it was, called Irma. That's a challenge. Those are irrefutable facts.
All right, we'll take another phone call. Good afternoon. Welcome to the revolution.
Hello, good afternoon.
Hi.
Just so there's no ambiguity, this is Toby Smith from Paradise Island Lights Out and Beach Club Project.
Hey, Toby.
Yeah, I'd like to run a few facts through the person that's guest on your show. Facts are is that Hubert Minnis does not take calls. Facts are is he ducks the media every opportunity he gets. He runs from the media. Facts are you all are borrowing money like drunken sailor. Facts are your response to Dorian was absolutely abysmal and your disaster relief is a disaster. You're putting people in domes. Facts are you're going around busting people for selling coconut water, trying to make an honest buck, while you got a prime minister saying you earn about $100. Next question. Facts are you're getting voted out and I can't wait for the day. Facts are you all should be ashamed of yourself and hang your head very, very low. So sit small, support the teachers, and stop skinning up.
All right, Toby, I don't know that. There was a question in there, but okay. Good afternoon. Welcome to the revolution.
Good afternoon, Juan.
How's it going?
Great. Good afternoon, Jeff. How are you doing, sir?
Good afternoon, sir.
Good, massive one on number 500. I know you from like me. We saw the patient, and we believe in the disease right away. See, with the lies, you also forget about the dump. You also forget about the $55 million the government lent for his time for the people. And I could go on and on and on. See, you don't mind the haters, man. Every time I see the boss, I tell the boss, make the right and hard decisions, man. And like you said, every day I tell all my subcontractors and all my subcontractors, and complain, not to shine, pay NIB. Huh? They're making thousands and thousands of dollars, they ain't paying no money, and they say, well, we just get money at the end of the day. You know, you have a lot of people with the law, many people don't like papers. Like Obama owed $500 million, $500 million, and people refuse to pay the money back. I should go on and on. Maybe people just want everything handed down to them, man. Hey, and all that people have, and stay strong, man. Take my call, one.
Okay. I don't know that Bahamian people don't like to pay bills. All right. Good afternoon. I pay my bill. I mean, I don't know that I like it, but I pay mine. Good afternoon. Welcome to the revolution.
I call the day to this dark and voice along with you on Mr. Minister Juan.
Hey, good afternoon, buddy.
Good afternoon,
okay. Raymond, yes. Darling, Ferguson here, Mr. Minister, the blind man who live in the McCullochon area, Haitian tradition. Mm-hmm. But what I want to say, right, a couple of things. Now, the Prime Minister is responsible for land. And us, as the Darlin family, we give the government a large piece of land in Acklands to build the school. The thing is, I heard him talk about taking a portion of the, hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Taking a portion of generation land. He don't need to bother with generation land because that's the poor people and that's our land and we got plans for our land. So please leave our land alone. Other thing is, right, the former government break down my old house and old shop, right? And the thing is they haven't put a stake down where they had broken it down from, right? And other people are occupying it. I want my land, okay? And he needs to fix this situation whereby people who are squatting on people's land would be able to get their land without paying a bunch of money to lawyers and the court, man, you know, and speak to them about situation as such. Loan facts. Thank you for your time.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Sure thing, Brayman. I don't know what he's talking about with the generation land in the school. Maybe you do. I don't
either.
Okay. Good afternoon. Welcome to the revolution.
Hey, good afternoon, Juan. How you doing?
Hey, what's up, Anton? I'm good, buddy.
He's good. Okay, good afternoon, Minister Jeff Lloyd. How are you doing?
Good afternoon, sir.
Okay, and good afternoon to the nation. I'm listening to you speak, Minister Jeff Lloyd, and to be quite frank, all I'm hearing is a complete reliance on excuses, as to why you could not accomplish what you all set out to accomplish, which you all promised the Bahamian people you would accomplish. You all are blaming failures on Dorian, and you're blaming failures on the pandemic, when in fact, you all created many of the missteps that led to you all failing the Bahamian people, you all failing the business community, you all killing tourism in our country. As a matter of fact, if we can get to some of the facts, I heard a caller, and I heard you spoke about the small business development loan, right? Can you tell me how many businesses that $45 million that you all spent of our taxpayer money, how many of those businesses are succeeding today that you gave those grants and loans to? Can you tell me how many jobs are still in existence that would have been created from the $45 million that you all spent of our taxpayer money? Can you please tell us, Minister, you spoke about free education, right? Can you please tell us what was the cost of education and what was the difference that you all specifically applied from what the cost was to what you all did, this program that you all implemented? Can you please tell us, Minister, as it relates to Grand Bahama and as it relates to Abaco and the long suffering that continues going on to 2 years post-Dorian, can you kindly tell us what level of assistance are you all providing for persons who are still without homes, who are still without electricity, who still require infrastructure from the government? Can you tell us what percentage of accomplishment you had on the island of Grand Bahama? Can you tell us, based on the amount of domes that the taxpayer money paid for, how many of those domes have been constructed to provide any level of relief to the Bahamian people who are suffering over there in Abaco and over there in Grand Bahama, in particular in the area of the former Deputy Prime Minister's constituency, where he explained that persons are still sleeping outside, persons are getting bites from Sanopi, people are walking on nails, etc. Can you tell us what is being done in terms of the level of assistance that you are using with Bahamian taxpayer money and giving Bahamians $80 to $100 per month in assistance? Can you tell us why you all entered into an agreement with the hotels in this country where you all decided, without the labor force knowing, without the workers, the Bahamian workers in this country knowing, you all entered into an agreement between the government and these hotels, which allowed the hotels to place Bahamian workers on furlough for over 1 year, 16 months, going on 17 months today. Bahamians have been unemployed. They cannot access the entitlement that they are due under the normal labor laws and the normal course of law in this country because of what you all did by creating that furlough, which is a complete disaster and a disadvantage and a disservice to the Bahamian labor force in this country. Can you all tell us as it relates to your ministry, Minister, and speaking about education, why is it that you all are failing the Bahamian students? Why is it that you all have not put together a successful program to properly educate? Why is it that you all are relying on parents when we have a situation in this country to date where, looking at the reality of the circumstance, parents in many instances are ill-equipped and lack the education themselves to pass on the knowledge to their children, but you all are relying on those parents to bridge the gap and help you all with passing on the level of education to the students, which is further creating a gap in why students aren't learning and why students...
Anton, is this going to wrap up anytime today?
The minister wants to talk. Fox One, I have a 10,000 list of concerns that I would like to ask the minister address.
Well, we don't have time to address 10,000 concerns.
But you know what, Juan? I'll end it with this. Let's take it to COVID-19, right? Minister, can you tell us why your government, July of last year, okay, when under the previous Minister of Health, Dr. Dwayne Sands, you all had somewhat of a successful record, even with a lot of failures in there, you had in comparison to what has happened, 104 COVID-19 cases and 11 deaths. We now have over 11,000 COVID-19 cases and over 200 deaths, 220 deaths to be precise, right? Why is it that you all allowed COVID-19 to run so rampant? Why is it that you all shut down our...
Oh, Jesus Christ, that talk. Come on, man. Make a reasonable contribution. You're not helping the Progressive Liberal Party in this, you know. You're doing the opposite. You're countering... You're trying to counter the FNM with this going on and on and on and on and on. I'm trying to make the PLP look good by making the FNM look bad. And you're ending up making the PLP look like it's lost. And believe me when I say this, and I'm not making it about you. A very high-ranking PLPs privately message me and tell me this, that they cannot take your contributions. So you got to try to make it more succinct and drill it down to where it's palatable, because right now it's just not. Do you want to address any of that?
No.
Okay. Good afternoon. Welcome to the revolution.
Hello. Good afternoon.
Hi. How's it going?
Good afternoon.
Hey, Juan, how you doing? Minister, how you doing?
Good time, sir.
Okay, Juan, I think I spoke to you about 2 months ago concerning that the building program that this government was canceled. I would like to ask the minister, do he agree on that step, that the step that was took, that was taken? And if he have any idea if the administration is planning on putting that program back into place.
Building
because
program.
I know that plenty of workers really was dependent on that job, that work, that program to continue. I'll hang up and listen to hear what you got.
No, don't go anywhere, sir. Building program. Which program are you speaking of?
Through the mortgage corp. You know, every successful government was building like small, like a
building houses,
affordable
yeah.
home.
Oh, yes.
That's
yes,
what I'm talking
yes,
about.
Yes, all right.
So
yes,
I noticed that y'all, yes, the administration yeah. canceled that. Yeah. Is the reason why they did that?
Yes.
And do you agree?
Yes, they're definitely, yes.
Building homes.
Yes,
and
yes.
No,
the government, our government decided, stay right there for us, please. Don't go anywhere, please. The government decided with the many, many, many incidences of mistakes that were made, horrible management, and it's nobody's fault, it's just the fact of it is, that the government was not going to be in the business of doing business. The government would empower the private sector. It would make available land for homeowners. It will encourage those homeowners to go out and secure their own contractors, which many of them did, Fox Hill and Carmichael Lau in the second instance. It would provide duty-free concessions for up to 2 years for those individuals to bring in their items. If they want to buy it here in New Providence or in the Family Islands, those duties that were paid by the businesses would be rebated to them. And those very same businesses, those same contractors, would have been engaged by those private homeowners to do the very same work that you're talking about. So no one lost any opportunities in the construction of homes for these very, what you might call affordable homes. Nobody did. Government got out of it because the government found that its ability to properly manage it was costing the taxpayers. And many of those homes were absolutely horribly constructed. I've got dozens of them in South Beach where the floors have fallen in, the walls have cracked, the roofs are compromised. That's why the government made that decision. And it went another route. It gave the people of the Bahamas, young people in particular, opportunities to buy land at incredibly low prices and encourage them to find suitably qualified Bahamian contractors. This is why the Ministry of Works, for two consecutive years, 18 and 19, ran programs, one of which was over at the St. Joseph Community Center, to qualify Bahamian contractors and to have those contractors registered with the Ministry of Works so that when people are engaging a contractor, they can verify whether that contractor meets the standard, the smell test, of providing quality service for what they are offering. That's what we did, sir.
Okay, but I realize, I noticed for this administration, anytime you say they have a problem or managing something, they normally put a board in place to see the overseer.
But the board was in place. The housing board was always in place. And the housing board never left. It was populated under one administration by a set of persons and another administration by another set of persons. That was not the point. The point is the policy that was taken, and I'm not in the Ministry of Housing, but I can tell you what the policy is. The policy that was taken is that we were not going to be in the business for the reasons that I have described to you, that we were going to use another methodology, which has been proven to be extraordinarily successful because we have thousands of Bahamians, young people in particular, who are applying and have applied for those properties. And we are looking across this country, including New Providence, to find more land that we can make available to our Bahamian people at incredibly low prices.
Well, I feel that you guys can do a disservice to the small contractors, to be honest with you.
Well, what I would suggest to you, sir, if you are a small contractor, BTVI has free courses, free. Free courses.
Listen to me.
Go to BTVI.
Qualified contractor.
But then you should register with the Ministry of Works and let your prospective clients know that you are registered. They can verify that you are registered with the Ministry of Works, and you will secure opportunities in that fashion, number one. Number two, you should also make sure that you are registered with the Ministry of Education. Because, as you know, there are dozens of opportunities that the ministry provides on an annual basis, basically during the summertime, in the repair of schools. And we have helped hundreds of small business contractors, and we have done exactly what I'm telling you to do, and that is to go get registered so we can know that when we spend the Bahamian people's money, we are getting value for money. And unfortunately, sir, I must confess to you that in too many instances, I have found, I speak only for me, I have found that that has not been the case, and I cannot afford for it to happen under my watch.
But the record shows that the majority of homeowners, the Bahamian owners, got their homes to mortgage corporations.
Well,
what
record shows that? There are 140,000.
You could check the subdivision.
What record shows that?
You got Jubilee, you got Pinewood. And the list go on and on and on. All of them got their home through mortgage corporation.
Mortgage corporation is a lending agency. That is not the same as the contractor in the Department of Housing. So getting your home through the mortgage corporation, and I certainly question whether the majority of homes, I know ain't nobody in the
market. No, I'm almost certain that's correct.
But the mortgage corporation is a lending agency. Persons from anywhere in the Bahamas can go to the mortgage corporation and secure the benefit of that particular facility. What you may be talking about is the Department of Housing, who provides the opportunities for persons to get a house on a particular piece of property with a particular contractor, so on and so forth. That's a difference, sir.
Yeah, I mean, I do. We've done numerous shows on housing in the Bahamas, and we have noted that the Minnesota administration has a policy of not being in the business of home building. I thought that that policy veered too quickly all the way over there, too much too quickly to me. I think that there were problems that were exigent that could have been addressed while you actually ran a parallel track of doing the land and getting the home.
That is an opinion, and I respect that.
All right. Good afternoon. Welcome to the revolution. Hello. Good afternoon. Nope. Let's take another call. Good afternoon. Welcome to the revolution.
Good afternoon.
How's it going?
All is well. Good afternoon to Mr. Loy.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
How's it going, sir?
Good afternoon, sir.
Yeah, I noticed since you move up like the Jeffersons, you switch. As you know, some people tell me that about you. A place you used to stop, they say they don't see you.
You got to stop, man. Why?
I don't know what y'all are talking about, by the way.
Now, you know that is not true. They don't stop as often. Man, don't stop that. I don't stop as often. And you probably can understand why.
I didn't get to listen to the whole show. Unfortunately, I just can't listen to the whole show. Yeah. But I can say this.
If one person I missed, because you always brought so wisdom and insight, and you kept me on my toes when I was on the show. One person I missed talking to is you, man.
Yeah, thanks. I really do. Thanks. First thing, dealing with education.
Yeah.
there's two schools in particular, Carlton Francis and CHVA schools.
Yep.
You all need to do something with the science that at those schools. Those signs look deplorable.
Yes.
And they've been like that for a few years.
Yeah.
Every time the media goes to those two schools and they set up the shoot and the report from those schools, you can see the disgusting signs. Those two schools.
CH and Carlton? Yes, sir.
Yes, yeah, CHVA and Carlton. And then on another hand, I just heard you was talking about land and housing.
Yeah.
With this proposal with selling the land in the Balmoral area, is that constitutional that the government is putting the age limit on who could buy that property? Keeping in mind, the Constitution speaks about the selling of land to the general public, and there should be no discrimination in the selling of land to the general public.
I was supposed to research that. You make a good point. But Jeff's an attorney.
I can tell you where it is. 26, Article 26, 8.
Robbie, I don't have my constitution on me. Sorry to identify you, but I don't have my constitution.
No, I have no problem with you identifying me.
Yeah.
You know, I ain't scared of nobody.
Well, I understand. But I
you know that because, you know, somebody should call you when you were sitting in the opposite chair. You know, I wasn't scared to let people know where I
am. Yeah, I appreciate that. But okay. No, let me find out about it.
You see,
I don't think that... You know, let me look at it.
If the government gonna explicitly put an age limit, okay, 45 and 18 to 45. Now, I'm not a lawyer, never was trained as a lawyer, but Article 26(8) speaks specifically about the sale of land to the general public.
All right.
Okay. I'm gonna check it out too, man.
So check that out.
Yep.
Because government policy supposed to line up first and foremost, with the Constitution.
Absolutely.
Okay. Have a good day.
Okay,
keep up the good work.
All right. Yeah, thanks a lot. Good to talk to you.
All right. Take another quick call, and then we got to take a break. I do wanted to ask you, I don't know if we have time, but someone keeps calling me, asking me about C.W. Sawyer.
What about it?
And I went by there a couple of times. It doesn't seem like there's any activity going on.
It's under repair.
All right.
It had very, very serious... they're working on the inside. Had a lot of roof issues, major, major roof issues. Now they're in there putting in the ceilings.
Okay.
And we weren't able, and that's why they moved the school over to
UB.
The school is over at UB. It's going very well, as a matter of fact. But they had it's an incredible amount of work that they had to be doing on that that roof. And then I don't know if you remember, they had a real serious rain, and the roof was being repaired, and the ceiling then was destroyed. So you had to go back and fix that. And that's what they are finishing up right now. They should be finished this week. But the ceiling, the roof is already on, and then the ceiling has to go in, and then all of the things inside, like the cabinets and all that stuff.
They should be back in the fall.
Yeah, and then now that they're finished with that, then they're going to do the floor.
All right.
Oh, definitely the fall. Yeah.
Hello.
Taking a quick call. Good afternoon. Welcome to the Revolution.
Yes. Good afternoon, Juan McCartney, and your guest.
Thank you.
Yeah. There's a question we've been asking from the time those cases ended. The Attorney General hired two QCs for the cases that you lost. With Barbara Hatter and the other one with Shane Gibson. We were asking, how much did you pay the QCs? Those questions were never answered. Do you have any idea, sir?
Hang
up and listen.
No, don't have any idea, sir. None at all. No, that's not my area. I work for education. I work for the government of the people of the Bahamas, but I am responsible for education.
Yeah, that is still outstanding. We've been trying to pry that out of Carl Bethel for a while now. I don't understand what the holdup is. Good afternoon. Welcome to the...
I'll remind him that it's out there.
Yeah, please. Hello, good afternoon. Welcome.
Thank you. Juan, how are you, sir?
I'm okay. How's it going?
Good. Minister Lloyd, how are you?
Yes, sir.
Good. I'll tell you one secret here. I don't normally call the talk show, but I was flipping through the dial in order to find something else, and then I overheard bits and pieces of this conversation. I just want to say this, Minister. From you don't know me. I think once we met in the barbershop, and that's about it. But I want to say this. From a distance, I respect you as one of those ministers who do not flip-flop. I mean, since the time I met you in the barbershop, you've always seemed to be a straight shooter. Now, there's a saying, a lie will only last for a moment, but a truth will endure forever. And one of the things that really gets me most is the amount of people who, you know, run to the media, talk show, news, and they spew a whole lot of stuff irresponsibly. And they don't have no kind of regards as how it's going to affect the public. And even many times they themselves know that they're lying. One of the things that really catches my attention about some of the news clips I hear, I often ask myself, how can a guy who had an opportunity, perhaps twice, let's say a period of 10 years, to address some of the major problems in this country? For example, you watch the roads deteriorated into potholes, the dumb problem increased to the point where it almost caused, you know, it almost caused destruction of people developing homes. You watch the shanty towns increase and get out of hand. And then all of a sudden, you get enough guts to come to the general public to convince people like me that you have the answer. I want to say to the minister, one, there are a whole lot of people who are criticizing, condemning, and they'll tell you how to even brush your teeth and tie your laces. But I want to encourage you, and by way of encouraging the Prime Minister, continue. You cannot afford to allow the people to swing you. And I know you came into power with saying it's the people time, but I remind you to something when Moses was leading the nation into the promise. When he had to lead, he didn't really take them in. He was leading them out of Egypt. When he came to the Red Sea, that great deliverance, it was the people who caused him not to get into the promised land, you know, because he listened to the people. But you have to stay in tune to what you believe is right, what you believe the Lord is saying, and always allow your conscience to be your guide in making your decision. And I believe the truth will speak for themselves. Because sometimes a lot of the people are saying a whole lot of things and they're not always right because they don't always see the whole picture.
I got
continue
you.
To do what you believe is right. And I believe with all of my heart that if the present prime minister, in spite of all that is being said, could lead this nation back into economic comeback, history will be very kind to him and judge him very fairly. Continue, and I'm praying that the Lord will indeed continue to bless the government of the Bahamas, not as a PLP on FNM, because when you fail, all of us hurt.
Okay.
When you succeed, all of us prosper. And I believe that for far too many people who are doing more destruction with their mouth, and because of ignorance, they don't know it, and all of us should be doing what the Bible says.
I got to go, caller. Thank you, but I thought you were wrapping up, but you kept going there. I really got to take a break here. And on the other side, I do want to ask you, Jeff, I have a teacher saying that teachers are owed special allowances all over the country. They want their money. This is from a special education teacher in Grand Bahama. And this also says, ask the minister, when will the junior high school in Holmes Rock be completed? It's been 5 years. So we'll do that on the other side of the
Well, you could.
If you got a short
No. Money's. We listen. We understand that there's money's owed to teachers, and that is being worked on at this moment. As soon as our funds are available, teachers will receive their pay.
All right. There's
no question. Holmes Rock School. I'm advised that school should be finished. I think by September. Let me just correct that one. I'll call you back. I know that we are working to get two schools finished. Low Sound, I don't believe that's going to be ready before January or sometime. But certainly the Holmes Rock School is pretty close to finishing, and I think it's going to be ready for occupancy come September 2021.
All right, let's take that break. We'll be back to wrap up on the other side.
In life, there are always challenges. Today, we find ourselves having to be more self-sufficient, socially aware, and technically savvy. At J.S. Johnson, we are committed to our customers by providing cost-effective insurance solutions. No matter what your insurance needs, we will always be here for you. Call 397-2100 or visit jsjohnson.com. J.S. Johnson Insurance Agents and Brokers, giving you peace of mind.
There's only one way to have a better morning.
How?
Start your mornings the best way with our 2 for $6 breakfast sandwiches at Wendy's. For a limited time, choose any two of your favorite breakfast sandwiches, including the fresh Kraken Sack Muffin, Honey Buttermilk Chicken Biscuit, Double Sausage Muffin, or the Sausage Egg and Cheese Biscuit. Wash it all down with our cold brew shake or coffee. Better mornings always start at Wendy's. Wendy's, different inside and out. Excludes airport locations.
Here's what you can expect when it's your turn to be vaccinated. After registering online, you will show up at your selected vaccination center on the appointed date and time. Remember to carry your ID along with your confirmation code for verification. Next, you will sanitize your hands and have your temperature checked before checking in and joining the queue. When it is your turn, you will be directed to a vaccination station and a healthcare provider will fill out your vaccine information card and administer the vaccine. You will then be sent to an observation area where you will wait for 15 minutes and be monitored for signs of any adverse reaction. In the case of emergencies, vaccine sites are equipped with an emergency setup where a doctor is on standby. After the 15-minute wait, you are free to go. Be sure to monitor any symptoms over the next few weeks and remember to schedule your second dose within 8 to 12 weeks. It's your choice, your chance to protect yourself. Register to get vaccinated for COVID-19 today at vax.gov.bs.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to The Revolution here on Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. We've been speaking with Minister of Education, Jeffrey Lloyd, about the last 4 years of administration. And we are fresh out of time, but I know that you are running again in South Beach, and I want to give you an opportunity to give a shout-out to your people in South Beach there.
Well, I want to say thank you to the people of South Beach. And they've been extremely warm and gracious and appreciative and helpful in my 4 years, 5 years now, since 2016. It's really been an honor and a privilege to serve. They're very, very nice people, very capable people. They basically want advice and support, but they know precisely what to do. It's one of those extraordinarily self-determining community. They are not sitting around waiting for no members of parliament to come and rescue them and lift them up. Yes, from time to time, they would like support and those support that we provide. But it's my honor, one, to provide help. I give all of my resources to the community and all that I could get, I provide for that community because I really love our people, Bahamian people. I've served them all of my life since I was a child. So politics isn't some new foray of public service for me. I've been a public servant all of my life, from the days when I was a young student all the way through my adult years. And so this is really an honor, and it's a privilege. And I continue to work for them. I'm available. I promise myself and promise them I would be available every single Thursday afternoon after 3 o'clock. I'm in my constituency office, and I'm there till the last person leaves. From the day that I was elected, I've been in my constituency every single Saturday when I'm in town, walking about, saying hello to the Bahamian people, and just seeing how things are going and how I may be able to help them. I've increased that now over the last year and a half to approximately twice a week, and it'll be even more. Just to say again, I'm here however I may be able to help. And I can tell you one, most times, not all the time, but most times, people from all other constituencies come, primarily because I'm the Minister of Education, so they've got education issues that they would like for me to help them with, and I'm happy to do so. So it's really been an honor, privilege. I thank them. I am asking their support, obviously, again, and I'm happy to be their representative and proud of the work they continue to do to make me proud as a Bahamian. God bless them, and all the best.
All right. Thank you so much, Jeff Lloyd, for coming on the show today. We appreciate you, as always. Great to see you. And you faced up to whatever anyone threw at you. So I don't know that a lot of it we gained anything from it, but there it is. So you guys take care out there. Lord Winland will be back tomorrow. Have a great day, Bahamas.
Banks forcing you to use technology to bank the way they want you to? Your convenience is important. So no matter what your banking needs, Commonwealth Bank's friendly staff are always available in branch for that personal one-on-one service. But when you choose technology, our online and mobile banking app offers you state-of-the-art functionality. The choice is yours. Commonwealth Bank. Bank the way you want.
At Bahamas Bus and Truck Company Limited, we provide vehicles known for quality and durability. From the iconic Jeep Wrangler to the award-winning Grand Cherokee, we've got your everyday driver covered. For larger tasks, our Ram 1500, Mitsubishi Fuso Canter Trucks, CMC Verica Vans, and Fuso Rosa Jitneys do way more than just deliver. We even carry a wide variety of pre-owned vehicles. To keep you going, our parts, service department, and body shop can accommodate our brands and others. Call us today at 322-1722 or email info@bahamasbus.com.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.